Zorbapastor on Your Health is pre-recorded.
From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorbapastor on Your Health. I'm Carl Christensen, and I'm here with family doc Zorbapastor. We'll spend the next hour with you in our virtual doctor's office.
But even though this is reality, I just want to tell you, we are not virtual. We are real.
We're
100% real. We are not automatons. We are real human beings.
But, Zorba, I don't see a receptionist here.
No, we
don't. Is that me? Am I the receptionist?
Maybe I am. One never knows. One never knows.
You're a receptive guy, I think. Yeah, you could be. We'll talk healthy living. We'll walk you through a healthy recipe. We'll get to some of your phone calls and emails and a few voicemails as well. And if you have a question for the good doc, the number to call anytime is 800-462-7414. And along with those calls, we'll discuss a few healthy living topics, Zorba.
Yes, well, kids benefit more when parents seem to step back versus take the lead. We'll talk about some interesting research that I think is important for anyone who has children and want to help them maybe a little bit too much. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to talk about, we talk about it all the time, laughter is the best medicine.
Sure.
But this is research that shows laughter may be as effective as drops for people with dry eyes.
Really?
Absolutely.
That sounds fascinating.
Really. We'll talk about it,
okay,
the science behind it, and what you can do if you suffer from dry eyes.
All right, and what's our special recipe?
Roasted zucchini and squash. You know, this time of year, I'm always looking for something to do with zucchini and squash. I like both of those, and this is something that's tasty that you can add to it's a side dish that you can add to anything you want to, and it will make sense to those who you invite over for dinner.
All right. To the phones we go at 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Let's welcome our first caller now from right here in Madison, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi, Zorba.
Hi, how are you?
We're old littermates from the Gishy Sopa days.
There you got it. You've got it.
Oh,
I remember you. So how
we
can I help you?
Okay, so I had one knee replaced about 10, 11 weeks ago, and now I'm having, mm-hmm, I had the other one replaced a week ago.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And I have a pain management kind of question.
Sure.
I don't know that you can really help me manage my
Well,
pain.
That's why we're here. We're here to try to answer those questions. Exactly. So
I had there's a little confusion on my part. I don't really care for Tylenol. It's not my mm-hmm pain management medication of choice because I get a kickback headache from it.
Uh-huh.
So I've always been taking Tylenol, that mixture of Advil Tylenol, which is really awesome. And mm-hmm you mentioned that on a mm-hmm previous show.
Sure.
But right now, because of the other meds I'm on for the knee, and it'll be a few more weeks, the doctor does not want me to take anything with Advil in it. So
sure.
I'm just stuck with Tylenol.
Well, first of all, what are the other meds you're on? Are you on a different anti-inflammatory?
Yeah, that's the reason. I think the culprit is diclofenac.
Uh-huh. So diclofenac is another anti-inflammatory. So when you're on diclofenac, how often are you taking it, the diclofenac?
I only take it once, mm-hmm, with lunch, or, you know, whenever I get around to eating lunch. So I think that's the main reason they don't want me to have anything with Advil. Now, with breakfast, I take a baby aspirin, and mm-hmm with dinner,
okay,
I take a baby aspirin. So that's another one, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Well, aspirin is in a class by itself. It is an anti-inflammatory, but it's in a class by itself. But let me get back to the diclofenac a bit. And the reality is, I take it you're still in some pain from your surgery. Is that correct?
Well, it's only been a week, yes. So the left knee, which is the most recent one, is still painful enough, like at night. So mm-hmm I do take a hydrocodone Tylenol kind of combination,
sure,
thing at night, just so I can sleep.
Uh-huh. So you're on diclofenac. Often diclofenac is given twice a day. So are you on a 75-milligram tablet?
Yes, I am, and
okay,
it's just once at lunch.
So the answer is, call your doc up, go to 75 milligrams twice daily. It's commonly given twice daily, 75 milligrams twice daily. And then if you need something in between, like you said, a little hydrocodone, not very often, but a little bit of bedtime will help. And you can see whether or not Tylenol in a smaller dose may help you and avoid that kickback headache that you get from it. But you could double the dose of diclofenac, and that may take care of the pain that you have.
That's awesome, Zorba. What about now? The other confusing thing is there's so many different kinds of Tylenols. There's fast acting, there's extra strength.
What you do is you take acetaminophen, take generic Tylenol, which is acetaminophen, and you can take up to 2,000 milligrams a day if you don't drink any alcohol, and up to 4,000 milligrams a day if you drink alcohol. That's basically what it is. So you can take 2,000 to 4,000 milligrams a day of acetaminophen. And yes, it does come in a variety of ways. They have extra strength, they have regular strength, they have arthritis strength, but basically acetaminophen, APAP, it's also called, is all exactly the same. 2,000 to 4,000 milligrams a day definitely will help you. And you want to find out if you've got that kickback from it, from that headache, maybe you should just stay on a lower dose and see if that works for you.
Yeah. Perfect.
Wonderful.
Thank you. I will.
Well, thank you. Glad that you shared that with us. And once again, double the diclofenac. Speak to your doc. That's what I would do.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I will.
All right. Take care. And enjoy your new knees.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much for that call at 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, Zorba, let's get to our first healthy living topic today. We've heard of helicopter parenting, right? Helicopter parents kind of overbearing, maybe over-involved, overprotective,
sure,
a lot of overs there.
Sure.
There's some new research that kids can benefit when parents just take a step back and let the kids take the lead more with their lives.
That's right. Now, you're a parent.
I am.
Right, right. And how old are your kids?
6 and 9.
6 and 9.
Yep.
So when do you step in and when do you not step in? Come on. It's tricky.
It is.
I'm going to put you. So how do you decide?
It depends on the situation.
What situation? When do you step in?
Well, lately we've been letting our 9-year-old like make lunches or snacks for school. And just, you know, he's always gotten dressed on his own very early. He was never.
Sure. How does he do?
He does
makes
great.
Up his
he loves
lunch.
It. He, That's he right. feels, I think, some agency and
yeah.
likes, some,
yeah.
likes
so
that.
Yeah. So when do you step in with that? When do you decide when you're going to step in?
If we don't like the outfit he's wearing. No, just kidding. We don't step in that often unless it's things get dangerous or, you know.
Well, I think that's kind of an important thing. So you're obviously going to step in when things get too dangerous.
Right.
But this is there are a couple of studies that really show that when parents go in too early, that kids refrain from actually trying to solve the problems. And the study looked at kindergarten kids, so kids a little bit younger than your child that we're just talking about. Kids who were either playing, cleaning up toys, learning a new game, talking about a problem. The kids were negatively impacted when their parents stepped in and said, oh, let me help you with this. But not only that, but the kindergarten kids had trouble afterwards regulating their emotions after the parents stepped in. So in other words, the kids were frustrated with the parents.
Yeah.
And the parents, were they frustrated with the kids? No, I just want to help you a little bit with this. No, it may be that you should stay away. So there was some research that basically came out of Stanford, and these were 4 and 5-year-olds, 3 different groups, control groups, how to put together a block puzzle. And the kids were asked to put together a new puzzle in one group. They looked at adults. Some of the adults came in physically to finish the puzzle. Some of them did not. Okay, so in some cases, the adults intervened and said, okay, Johnny, let me help you finish the puzzles, and others they didn't. Then the kids were given a new puzzle box, okay? The puzzle box was glued shut. Okay? Got it? Puzzle box
was
glued
shut. Sounds like a mean trick.
Well, it was kind of a mean trick. It was not possible to open up the puzzle box.
Okay.
In other words, no matter what they did, they were not going to succeed in opening up the puzzle box. And what they did is they had a clicker. They timed it. You know those stopwatches? Click.
Sure.
Remember the old stopwatches?
The old stopwatches,
I mean,
yep.
you know, click. Remember click. The, come yep. on, let's see, click. You know, click.
Sure.
You know, the Olympics were held with those stopwatches.
Yep.
Click. Not a thousandth of a second.
60 Minutes still uses one, I think.
Yeah, click. I actually bought one. I bought one about a year ago because they just wanted to hear the tick, 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 tick. Click, 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 previously come in and help them finish a task got frustrated and stopped trying to open up the box after a short period of time. Whereas the kids, whose parents had not actually interfered with them, continued to try to open up the box. Now, none of them ever succeeded. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of a trick.
It was good glue, really good glue they used.
It was totally good glue. But the reality is the kids whose parents had not intervened with them tried to solve the problem longer. In other words, they kept at the problem, even though they ultimately could not solve the problem. So what are we doing with our kids? Well, we want our kids to be able to solve problems. Mm-hmm. We don't want them to stop and be frustrated. And reality is this is, you know, the helicopter parent who's looking all the time at what their child is doing, mm-hmm. you know, is really not the way to be. What you want to do is you want to give your kids some space to be able to enter into the problem, figure out the problem, do what they're doing, come up with an answer, even if it's not your answer, mm-hmm. like, what are the right things to wear for school and what they put in their lunchbox? You may want to intervene afterwards and say, you know, I think there should be a sandwich along with those three candy bars. But, I mean, eventually they'll learn to put the sandwich
in. So I shouldn't glue
the-
my son's lunchbox closed? Is that the moral of the story here?
You know,
or should I see what happens if he does?
You know, if you glue your son's lunchbox closed, the question is not what will your child do, but what will your wife say?
Yeah, I don't think it would be good.
I don't think it would play. I don't think it would play.
No, what kind of parent were you?
Oh, we're very light.
Okay.
Yeah, we were very light on. Yeah.
You guys had a light touch with growing
up. Oh, we had
a
light touch. We had a light touch.
Not helicopter
when they were younger
parents.
And when they were teenagers, we had a light touch. Yeah, that was just my wife Penny was a teacher, and we were not, you know, we had a light touch with our kids. Mm-hmm. Danger was something else, but we wanted them to get frustrated. I mean,
sure,
we
that's
don't
part
I
of
take
it.
That back. We don't want them to get frustrated.
Well, it's valuable.
But you have to have frustration in order to do it. But I want to go to another topic while this goes. How did you teach your kids to ride a bike?
We started them on the grass.
Uh-huh.
Just took off
do?
The training wheels, started on the grass, mm-hmm. even though it's hard to pedal on the grass.
It's
a little bumpy, too. Uh-huh. But, you know, they wipe out, and it's just the grass. And then within, both of them learned really quickly, within, like,
at the right
5
time.
Minutes, maybe.
So, I mean, there are new things called striders, where kids actually, which
balance
are wonderful.
Bikes,
they were not invented when my children were.
I didn't know.
They had invented bikes when our children were younger, but they had not invented that. And they remember, we live, our house is kind of a little bit on a hill, a little bit up, and there were no trees at the time. And they remember, we put them into this clothes, and there were no helmets around at all. And we just sent them going down the hill.
Just sent them down the hill.
Down the hill, and if they fell, they fell on the grass. And they still remember that. And not one of my four children have ever taught any, well, and three of my four kids have kids. None of them have taught their children how to ride a bike the way we taught them.
Okay.
Because they have learned to be safer when it comes to teaching them. So I want to tell you something. We learn something as adults when our children essentially solve problems as children.
Fascinating research. 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Call anytime and leave us a voicemail if you'd like to. And let's go to one now. This is a voicemail from a listener in Texarkana, Arkansas.
Listening to the radio today, I was surprised to hear about this proliferation of colon cancer. Did not know that stat existed, and it kind of scares the bejeebus out of me. But I would ask, or some of the outlying reasons, I guess, that was giving was, you know, some lifestyle stuff. I'm curious about microplastics and their existence in our ecosystem and our biome that we have. Is that something that could be causing a lot of these cancers that are in a higher level than normal? Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Maybe. That's a big maybe. We don't really know. So when I first started practice, colon cancer, first of all, started at a later age, and it generally was within 20 centimeters of the rectum. So in other words, you could do something called a proctoscope, different than a colonoscopy, and you would pick up something like 85 or 90% of all colon cancers. Over time, over my lifetime, it's moved more proximal, further in a more proximal way into the colon, so you can't do that anymore. We've been doing colonoscopies for the last 20 years because proctoscopy really doesn't do anything you know, doesn't give you enough value. In the meantime, there's been a resurgence in colon cancer among younger people. So we now recommend that you actually start getting a colonoscopy or Cologuard for people who are low risk for colon cancer, or a yearly FIT test, which is looking really for occult blood within the stool, that we start at 45. So the answer is, we don't know why. We assume lifestyle is an issue. We know diet is an issue. A high fiber diet is better. We know exercise is an issue, but we don't really know. Could be insecticides. It could be other things in our food supply. Certainly could be plastics. I don't think we know. The jury is out, but the reality is it's occurring earlier. The good news is that colon cancer can be screened. And for the most part, if it's picked up early, it is a totally curable disease. And that's what the most important thing is. Screen early and screen appropriately.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, before we take a break, Zorba, throughout the history of medicine, we've seen countless contraptions and elixirs claiming to cure ailments or professing miraculous health benefits.
We have.
That's true.
Over the years. Countless years. That's right. Countless years.
Grab your surfboard, Zorba, as we paddle out into the turbulent ocean and get barreled on a glassy wave of medical quackery.
This is
the segment known as Quacking Up with Dr. Zorba.
Quack.
Quack it up with Dr. Zorba.
Quack, quack, quack,
there it
quack,
is.
Quack,
yeah.
quack, quack.
That's a good impression of the duck.
It is.
All right, Zorba, most of us have heard of bloodletting, the intentional withdrawal of blood from a patient to prevent or cure illness or disease. Mm-hmm. But tell us about the 17th century French physician who employed this technique to help cure, get this, a broken heart.
A broken heart. So when you were young, you had a girlfriend.
Sure.
Before you passed away. Did she ever dump you?
I've been dumped, for sure.
You've been dumped.
Oh,
you've been dumped. And and dumped, you knew, when you were younger, you might have had a broken heart.
Of course.
You know, you might have had a broken heart.
I've had a couple broken
hearts.
That's right,
broken heart. So if you were around the 1600s, then if you had a broken heart, then the treatment for that, especially if you happen to be, which you're not, plump and well-fed.
Plump and well-fed.
He recommended, this particular doctor recommended bloodletting. Now, the bloodletting was interesting. He recommended that bloodletting occur to the point where your heart was basically in heart failure until you became short of breath.
Okay.
And the place that he thought was the best way and the best area to let the blood was to get the hemorrhoids to bleed.
Wow.
So this was bloodletting from your anus. He would have... I assume people get into what we call the lithotomy position or another position, and then he would then basically take the anus and then open it up so that you could bleed out, and then, I don't know, he stopped the blood, and eventually you probably just stop worrying about the person who actually dumped you, so you said,
you have
stop
bigger,
this
you have bigger
blood
problems
from
now.
Coming on bigger problems in the anus.
Like the cure for a broken
really,
heart is to break the heart,
literally break the heart. So... So getting back to other issues, that bloodletting, it was very, very common.
Sure.
So back in George Washington's day, you remember George?
I've heard
George
of him,
Washington,
yeah.
That's right. He had Quincy. You know what Quincy was?
No, his dog?
Quincy was not his dog, and it was not a detective.
Oh.
But Quincy was actually swollen tonsils, and it was probably from a strep infection. And everyone was afraid to actually, he was having trouble breathing, do anything for it, so they started bloodletting him. And he probably died of heart failure.
Oh, really?
From the bloodletting, he'd still be alive today
if it weren't
for that. And Galen, who was a famous sort of surgeon doctor from years ago, who said that there are four humors, there, you know, bilious and a whole bunch of other things, he also thought bloodletting was important. And even back to the point of St. Mary's of Bethlehem in London, which was the famous psychiatric hospital from which we call Bedlam. That was the short name, Bedlam. And they had patients who, you know, clearly were having lots of psychiatric problems. But they often, if their psychiatric problems got out of control, they led them into an area, slit them over, and got them to bleed.
Wow.
And they thought they were actually doing heroic measures to cure their insanity, and clearly they didn't. So I mention this because anyone who's even thinking of bloodletting today, and let me tell you something, in this day and age of the internet, you've heard of the internet,
of course.
Day and age of the internet. I bet if you look up bloodletting, you'll find someone who does it.
Still.
Come on. This is the United States of America, where you can have anything done in any way. And bloodletting is probably done somewhere, probably in California. Not really sure Californians, but my guess is somebody in California does it. Don't do it. It doesn't do anything for your health.
Do you have an example of medical quackery to contribute to the show? Maybe something you saw recently in the news? If it bleeds, it leads. Isn't that what they say? Just send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org, or of course, through Facebook.
Coming up, more of your phone calls. Zorba will answer more of your emails, and we'll be cooking up a delicious roasted zucchini and squash recipe. So keep it right here on Zorba Pasture on Your Health from PRX. Carl Christensen in Buck's studio in Madison, Wisconsin. This is Wisconsin Public Radio.
It is.
And this is Zorba Pasture on Your Health.
I am.
He's right there. Dr. Zorba. I see him.
That's me.
He's wearing a cool shirt.
That's right. Madras. We called it Madras when I was a
Madras.
Kid. It's called Madras.
It looks great. A lot of color.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That's color.
Black t-shirt
like
under
color.
It.
Like
cool hat. What's Trout? Where's Trout Lake? Trout Lake
is Minocqua.
Oh,
Minocqua,
okay.
Wisconsin.
Gotcha.
Yes, Minocqua.
I should have known that, probably.
Yeah, you should have.
I didn't grow up in Wisconsin.
No, it's been on the test. You didn't grow up yet. Where did you grow up?
Minnesota.
Where's that?
800-462-7413 is the number to call anytime. That's 800-462-7413.
But is before that near Nebraska?
It's
no,
around
I think it's
there
Dakota.
Somewhere. Yeah, just throw
you know,
a dart at a map.
Flyover, that's right. Right, land in the middle of the map of the United States and you'll be close.
You'll
right?
be all right. Yeah, before we get back to our calls, let's do the recipe. We got roasted zucchini and squash.
Yeah, so something simple. Okay, start out with 1 pound of zucchini. Now, when you pick out zucchini at the grocery store, mm-hmm. how do you decide what zucchini to pick out?
Oh, I'm not the best at this, at produce selection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you're stuck.
Color,
okay.
feel, there's a
yeah,
couple
color
things.
Color and feel.
Yeah,
you
right.
want to look and make sure it doesn't have dimples in it.
Okay.
You want to make sure it's smooth. Smaller zucchini is better than a bigger one. A bigger one is going to have more seeds and stuff in the middle.
Ah.
Those are really often zucchinis that get out of control in August are the gigantic ones.
Okay. 1 pound of zucchini?
Same thing for the yellow squash.
All right.
Same thing for the yellow squash. But there's a difference. You know, there's a textural difference between if you think of zucchini, you think of a yellow squash. Yellow squash has sort of it has a different texture. Zucchini is a little bit more porous on the outside.
Zucchini seems a little more glossy.
Yeah, it is more glossy, a little bit more porous. But there is a difference
squash
in the
squash is more of a matte mm-hmm. finish.
Yeah, more of a matte. Yeah, exactly. God, you
I don't know. Is that
matte finish?
Does that apply here?
Yeah, have you been decorating lately in your house? maybe that's
eggshell finish? I've been painting
finish.
A lot.
You have been painting a lot. Right, eggshell finish.
Yeah. That's okay, right. So a pound of yellow squash, sliced half inch.
That's
thick.
Right. 3 tablespoonfuls of extra virgin olive oil.
3 big tea olive oil.
Okay, now you're going to use 1/2 teaspoon of Italian seasoning and 1/2 teaspoon of garlic powder.
Okay.
1/2 teaspoon of sea salt.
Half little tea sea
some
salt.
Pepper, some freshly ground pepper.
Okay. All right, sounds good.
Preheat the oven to 425 degrees. Then, by the way, when you preheat your oven,
mm-hmm.
how do you decide that it's heated up correctly?
It just dings. It's ready to go.
You know where the thermometer is in your oven?
Just the readout on the front of it,
but
right?
But the thermometer is actually in the back of the oven.
Oh, okay.
So the front of the oven may not be at the right temperature. The front of the oven, if it's 425, the front of the oven may only be at 350.
That's why the back of the frozen pizza always gets burned first.
Have you noticed it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I had to put this into frozen pizza context to understand what you're saying.
You're from Wisconsin. No, you're from Minnesota.
Yeah, Minnesota.
Sorry, but that's
we
okay.
got good frozen pizza
that's
there.
It. Yeah. Not as good. Not as good.
Not as good.
Not as many. But that's the issue. So what you should do is set a timer and make sure that it basically is 5 or 10 minutes after the thing pings.
Ah.
Because the front of the oven is not as warm as the back of the oven where the thermometer was.
Okay.
All right. All right. Preheat the oven at 425 degrees, and when it pings, wait another 5 to 10 minutes.
Okay.
Then, in a large bowl, drizzle the sliced zucchini and squash with olive oil, season with Italian seasoning, garlic powder, sea salt, and black pepper. Toss it, arrange it on a single tray of a large baking sheet. If you don't want to do anything with the baking sheet to clean it afterwards, then put it on parchment paper, which really is good. Roast the zucchini and squash for 10 to 12 minutes until tender. And my recommendation is once it's tender, turn in the broiler for about 2 minutes and get a little bit crispy on
the top,
a little black
on the top.
That's
another thing I do to a frozen pizza. I finish it off with a 2 minute broil just to give like that cheese a little bit of a golden look.
I'm just listening.
I have to keep putting things into perspective and the
frozen
context
pizza.
Of frozen pieces.
I'm just listening. I'm just watching you because you've got this smile on your face. You're just thinking of frozen pizza.
Yeah.
That's what you're thinking of and your favorite frozen pizza. That's it. I got it. Okay.
You got it?
That's it.
Okay.
I got it. So
maybe next week we'll do frozen pizza for a recipe.
If you want a copy of today's recipe, go to ZorbaPastor.org. That's ZorbaPastor.org. And, of course, Facebook.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, let's go back to the calls now. Let's try to help out a caller in Salina, Kansas. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How are you today?
I'm pretty good.
How can we help you?
I've had a pituitary tumor, and I've lost the entire pituitary gland.
Oh.
So I have no adrenal function, no steroids in my body. But if I take steroids, it has a lot of negative effects for me.
But you have to take steroids or you'll die. I mean, if you don't make steroids, you've got to take external steroids. And if you look, we didn't understand this. John F. Kennedy, JFK, had Addison's disease, which basically means his adrenal glands weren't working. It wasn't due to his pituitary. The pituitary sends info to the adrenal glands, which then produce steroids. And if you look at him, he was getting thinner and thinner and thinner. Mm. And they had discovered prednisone, basically, and cortisol. And once he got that externally, he was able to sort of bulk up and become, you know, become a normal person, but he would have died before that.
Hmm.
So you need external steroids. When did you have, you had a pituitary tumor and they removed the whole tumor?
It was pretty miraculous, I thought.
Yeah.
They went through my left nostril
through the nose,
sinuses and took it out. And it was probably the size of my fist.
Wow. So you had a significance because there are microadenomas, small little things where they can remove that and keep some of it. But you had something that size that was quite, quite miraculous. When was that? When was it removed?
2006.
So you've been on steroids since that time?
Yes. But they do help somewhat, but I had also been on growth hormone for quite a few years. And that really helped me, like, feel normal, maintain a normal amount of energy.
Sure, exactly.
And I've struggled with getting it lately. I'm not sure exactly what's going on. The doctor is doing the paperwork, and the insurance is saying that they're not getting the paperwork or something. I've not had access to my growth hormone. And I have just been, on a regular day, just exhausted.
Sure.
I'm a special education teacher. And I was wondering if there was some other way to just be able to maintain, because I feel there's so many effects.
Sure, of course.
I get confused.
Yeah.
My memory's affected. My sleep is affected. Some days at the end of the day, I can't even hold a conversation. I get home and I don't talk to my husband because I'm just too tired.
Very difficult. So a couple of questions here. What do you take? Do you take hydrocortisone or prednisone for your steroids now?
Prednisone.
Prednisone. And you've been on that for the whole time or?
No, I was off of it for a while because I had some steroid with an arthritis medicine.
Okay. So you had some with that. So a couple of things. So first of all, and you take it once a day or twice a day?
Once.
Okay. So one of the things you may want to discuss with your endocrinologist, who's giving, is it an endocrinologist that's regulating this or what? Who's regulating
it? Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
you may want to talk about taking hydrocortisone twice a day instead of prednisone and see whether or not that'll make a difference. Even though you've been on prednisone for a long time, switching to twice daily hydrocortisone sometimes can make a difference in terms of energy. Not always, but sometimes. So that would be one thing I would discuss, you know, with the endocrinologist. How long have you been with your particular endocrinologist recently?
Oh, very long time.
Very long time. Okay. So the issue then is the issue with the problem with the insurance company. Have you changed insurance companies recently? Because the growth hormone is expensive. That's what it's all about. I mean, they're arguing over money. They want to keep their money. They don't want to buy the drug. I mean, let's face it. That's the way it is. That's the way insurance companies are. So if there's something wrong, the question is, are they just putting up obstacles or is there something wrong from the doctor's office? Or is there something wrong with the insurance company? How long have you gone without the growth hormone?
Since December.
That's a long time. So you've been without it for a long time. Has this ever happened to you before?
No.
It's not happened before.
Started by changing my prescription a couple times, the insurance company, not the doctor.
Mm-hmm. Changing your prescription, meaning not as much growth hormone or a different company, or what do you mean?
A different company, different name.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not even sure what makes them qualified to do that.
Well, they're, if it's a generic, they can change to a different generic. They're allowed to do that as long as the FDA, it's an equivalent generic that's doing this. So the issue may not be, if you've been with this doctor for a long time, they're filling it out, it's not getting done. Have you called the insurance company at all?
Yeah, and that's where they tell me that they're not getting the right paperwork.
Uh-huh. Did they tell you what's wrong with the paperwork?
Yeah. They'll say they don't get it or... They say that it's not fully filled out, and I've called them in the doctor's office right there, and I just can't seem to mediate the situation.
Do you have a lawyer?
Yes.
Why don't you get your lawyer involved? You know what? Situation like this, it's an insurance company. It's obviously not from the doctor's point of view. Why don't you talk to your lawyer and say, look, I'm having this problem. Can you help me with it? There's something about lawyers. Now, one of my daughters, Vanessa, the youngest daughter, is a lawyer. And you know what? When I have a problem, I call her up. The advice is free, of course. I did pay for it. I prepaid for the advice. By raising her. But you know what? She gives me good advice in situations like that. And there have been situations where she has said, hey, Dad, I'll make a call for you. And somehow it gets solved. Call your lawyer. Get your lawyer involved. Because sometimes even when they go, oh, a lawyer? They go, oh, sorry, the T wasn't crossed. We'll take care of it right away. Get your lawyer involved. It's really important for you to have all the stuff that you need to keep yourself healthy. And they are, the insurance company, putting up obstacles to you. You've tried to solve the problem. You've been with your doctor for a long time. They're filling out the forms. And the insurance company is saying, forget it, because they don't want to pay for it. And the reality is the lawyer is going to be able to get on top of it more. You've done the best you can do. This is what lawyers, this is why lawyers were created. That's what I would do. It's very important because you need your energy. And besides, it's important for your longevity for you to be able to have exactly the right concoction of steroids and growth hormone that'll keep you going.
Oh, okay. I wish I had done that sooner.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks for your call.
Well, thank you so much. I very much appreciate it.
Okay. You take care now. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much for that call at 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, before we take a short break, Zorba, we always love hearing from the Grammar Police, but here's a new one. This email came from a fierce, new, and well-seasoned division of the Grammar Police. This is from the Spice Police.
Oh,
man. All right.
Spice Girl. Right?
Oh, there you go. The following email came to us from an anonymous listener who writes, I love your show, Zorba. I wish it was on more than once a week. Oh, thanks. That's nice. That's very nice. Mm-hmm. Today, someone called about expired spices, mm-hmm. and you said not to worry about that. Mm-hmm. Well, I had crushed mm-hmm. red pepper on my mm-hmm. spice rack and put it on my escarole mm-hmm. and beans, and there were little disgusting bugs in it. Mm-hmm. It was expired. Uh-huh. Now I keep it in my refrigerator and mm-hmm. check all my spices mm-hmm. often and dump mm-hmm. them if they expire. Uh-huh. Most don't taste or smell like they should after the use-by dates. Mm-hmm. They're not that expensive either.
Uh-huh. Well, there are a few things here. First of all, I have no idea why he had worms. Is that what he
little
had?
Little bugs
in there. But my guess is that it was sterile when it actually came off the shelf and you first opened it up.
Yeah.
And so I don't think the bugs arrived in there sort of on their, I don't know. I wasn't in this kitchen. Mm-hmm. I don't know why
it's hard to say
in there.
What happened there.
And I don't think you have to worry about the fact you're going to have bugs in your spices because you just buy that. But the reality, he brings up a couple of points. First of all, the spices may not be as spicy
right.
when you leave them longer. Mm-hmm. So, you know, buying smaller amounts, you know, or buying, you know, in smaller containers works. But the expired by date is really mandated by the FDA. And why do they mandate it? Because they're the FDA.
It's a suggestion, right?
You know, they do a lot of suggestions. You know, they have some rule. We're just going to put it expanded. We're going to put it expired by. I mean, I don't know if this is a trade group. The spice trade group wants them to do it mm-hmm. so they get more people to buy spices. But the reality is, it's not as if spices go bad and they will hurt you. That's the most important
thing.
They
just lose their strength.
Yeah, basically. But I've got my internal spice police. My daughter, Vanessa.
Oh, yeah?
My daughter, Vanessa, went down and said, you know, Dad, this mustard has been expired. Well, she was right. Some of the mustard was 10 years old. And so that mustard we threw out. And I think it probably would not have tasted very good at all. But it didn't go bad. It's just that it was in the back of the cabinet. And so I really hadn't noticed it. So you could have your internal spice police. They could be your children.
Sure.
They actually come in. But in this case, it was the mustard police.
The condiment police came in?
The condiment police. They're that's tough. Right.
Did you catch a mistake Zorba made? Feel free to spice up our show by posting on our Facebook page, or you can send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
Much more of the show to come. We'll have more of your calls. We'll tackle another interesting healthy living topic and more of your emails as well. So please keep it right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX. Carl Christensen in Buck Studio with Dr. Zorba Pastor. This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. He's sitting right over there across the desk from me. He's looking great with his Trout Lake hat and his glasses that look great.
That's right.
Just describing who it is. And if you're listening right now, thank you for listening. There's a lot out there to listen to, so thanks for choosing this show to listen to. And if you have a question for us, the number to call anytime is 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. But before we get back to those calls, Zorba, let's do another healthy living topic. One of the taglines on this show we've said for years is laughter is the best medicine.
Right. And we talk about that all the time because we know laughter and laughter therapy helps with depression and anxiety and stress. There's some evidence it helps with people with chronic pain. When they laugh, they feel better. It may help with the immune function. It certainly affects mental health. But this was a very interesting study published in the British Medical Journal talking about laughter is as effective as eye drops for people with dry eyes.
Huh.
Now, dry eyes are a problem. Now, they are a problem as you get older, you know, because basically you don't often have as many tears. But they're a problem with people who are younger because when you stare at a computer screen or a screen of any sort, you don't blink as much. And dry eyes can affect your vision. They can be itchy. They can be uncomfortable. And there often are eye drops that really help people with dry eye drops that help people with dry eyes. And often if you put a warm, moist compress or another compress on top of the eye with warmth, it will help the dry eyes. But this was looking at laughter. So here's what they did. They took people with dry eyes, which they can measure. Ophthalmologists and optometrists can measure it. There's a scale for measuring dry eyes. And half the people had eye drops put in their eyes to see whether or not it alleviated their dry eyes over time, which they do. You've got to put the eye drops in all the time. And the others were given laughter therapy. So they were given an app to see how to laugh. Now, we know how to laugh.
Sure.
But they had to look at the laugh. And here's what they had to repeat. This is a phrase that they had to repeat 30 times over a five-minute period. You had to do he-he-he-he, ha-ha-ha-ha, cheese-cheese-cheese-cheese, chick-chick-chick-chick, ha-ha-ha-ha.
Did you say cheese-cheese-cheese or cheese?
I did. No, okay. Cheese. No,
cheese
no,
is
no,
in there.
No.
Okay.
He-he-he-he, ha-ha-ha-ha, cheese-cheese-cheese-cheese, cheek. I can't make this thing up. Cheek-cheek-cheek-cheek, ha-ha-ha-ha.
We got it. Yep.
Can we do it another again?
Don't do it again. Please don't do
so
it again.
So what happens is you actually are using your facial muscles. You're using the part of your muscles that actually are affecting the eyelid, and you are exercising your eyelid, which then produces tears. And what they discovered was, after a period of time, they followed these people over time, this was as good as eye drops in the eyes to actually improve the amount of lubrication that was in the eyes. So it's quite interesting. So first of all, it's a low-cost intervention. Mm-hmm. You don't have to buy an eye drop. But there's another issue that's involved here, because dry eyes have become so much more common because we're looking at screens. Maybe what we have to do, because we talk about like every hour or two, you have to get up, move around so you don't hurt your back. Maybe you have to get up, move around, and start laughing. Maybe you have to do that. Maybe it's just laughing.
Yeah.
Or maybe we will start to do laughing exercise, and I'm serious about this, where you actually do it for like 30 seconds or a minute, maybe just 2 to 3 times a day. That might improve your vision.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, let's go back to the calls now. Let's help out a caller in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Hi.
Good day. I was calling to ask a question about my heart.
Mm-hmm.
Evidently, I've got a hole that from the left to right ventricle.
Okay.
Blood seep through.
Uh-huh. When did they first find this?
They found it about 3 months ago.
3 months ago. How old are you?
78.
Uh-huh. So they found it 3 months ago. Were you having some symptoms, or what was going on?
Well, they did an MRI for my heart, and they found this hole in it. It had never healed when I was a child.
Mm-hmm.
And the insurance company failed or won't pay for it. The doctor can fix what they won't pay for, and I don't know what to do.
So the insurance company will not pay to have this hole fixed. So there must be something that is going on. It's a function. There's something called a shunt, a left-to-right shunt or a right-to-left shunt, where basically blood is not going into the correct space, so you can't do things. So they found this on the MRI. And if it's small, they don't necessarily do it. What did your cardiologist say? Did they say they wanted it fixed? Were you having symptoms? Tell me a little bit more.
Well, yes. He said he could fix it, but the insurance company said no, it's not medically necessary.
Uh-huh. It's not medically necessary. So they said it's not. Well, first of all, there are, we can have holes. There's something called the patent foramen ovale, which is an area of the heart that you may have a small defect from birth. And it can be a small enough difference in flow so that it's a hole that's there, but they don't necessarily pay to have it fixed because you're not symptomatic. What kind of symptoms do you have? Why did you have the test done in the first place, the MRI?
I had a stroke last year.
So you had a stroke. Okay, well, that can be some reason. So are you on, you're on Medicare. What kind of Medicare are you on, the regular Medicare or Medicare Advantage?
I have TRICARE for Life and Humana.
So there is a way that you can actually dispute what an insurance company says. And you've got TRICARE for Life and you've got Humana. Humana you have, you mean through Medicare Advantage and TRICARE, you were with the military?
Yes.
So you've got two things. Who disputed it, TRICARE or Humana? Or was it?
Humana.
Have you gone the TRICARE route to see whether or not TRICARE will take care of it?
No, I haven't.
I would do that. That's what I would do first. TRICARE is often pretty good. Before I did anything else, I'd say submit it to TRICARE and see if they'll cover it. That's what I would do first, because you've got two insurances. You've got one because you were in the military, and you've got one because of Medicare. So I would initially go through TRICARE and see what they will do. And if not, then you go back to Humana and you dispute it. Because the person who often said we're not going to cover it is a lower level insurance adjuster. And so it didn't necessarily go through the appropriate medical monitor. And if it did, then you get a second look from another medical monitor. And this has to do with whether or not the risk from your stroke is from the hole in the heart that they found, whatever that was, and whether or not they can actually justify that particular, you know, procedure. So somebody has to look at it. I would try TRICARE first, and if not, I would dispute it with Humana, and then I would also dispute it with TRICARE. I think if you do that, you've got a pretty good chance it's going to go through. And if not, then I would go get a second opinion.
Okay.
Okay. And if not, if you know anyone who's a lawyer or you have a lawyer, that's the next step to go to. I think if you push on it, you may get it covered. That's okay. Your best bet. Okay.
All right. Thank you very much.
And thank you for your service.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks so much for that call at 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, Zorba, as you know, we have some doctors who listen to the show, and quite often they'll send us voicemails offering up their take on something that was discussed on the show.
They do.
So
we welcome that.
We love it.
Right.
So we decided to create a segment for this, and it's called Doctor to Doctor.
Doctor?
Doctor.
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 And doctor.
It's doctor to doctor.
I always like this. I always like it.
Hello, medicine.
Hello, medicine. All right. The following voicemail came from a doctor in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm. Hello. Talking about skin softness with Dove and so on, particularly with the COVID, if you think about it, using hand sanitizer dissolves oils in your hand, but then it evaporates and leaves them there. So anytime you can use hand sanitizer rather than soap, it's a good deal. It'll keep your hands softer, and it is certainly more sterile than washing your hands for 10, 15 seconds. In surgery, we wash our hands for 10 minutes with an antibacterial. So that's just a comment. Goodbye.
That's a very good comment. Brings up a very good point. Before COVID, I would wash my hands all the time in the sink. My hands would get, especially in the wintertime, would get really, you know, really chapped. Mm-hmm. They were really very difficult. I'd have to use a moisturizing cream at night, sometimes go to a steroid cream. COVID came in, and we started using hand sanitizer. And we started using hand sanitizer more commonly even before that. And I don't have any trouble with my hands at all. So it brings up a really good point. When you use hand sanitizer, it doesn't actually reduce the oils in the skin as much as soap. Very good. And it also reduces the bacterial count quite a bit. So the answer is hand sanitizer, especially if your hands are chapped. Chapped. How do you pronounce it? Chapped.
It's chapped. Right?
Chapped.
Yeah, chapped. Have a comment or healthy living question for the good doc? Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, before we punch out today's Zorba, let's take a listener email. The following question came from Greg in Wisconsin. Greg writes, "My wife has severe dementia and started wandering in the evenings several months ago. She would wander around the house starting after dinner until bedtime. Her neurologist prescribed lorazepam to reduce anxiety. I tried that for a week with no results. In the meantime, I did some online research looking at research studies and went to some dementia group blogs. There were mentions of marijuana mm-hmm. acting as a remedy. Mm-hmm. Since we live in Wisconsin, mm-hmm. I had to go to Michigan mm-hmm. to obtain some gummies. Mm-hmm. I gave my wife a half dose of a gummy the first mm-hmm. evening, and she didn't wander at all. Mm-hmm. She simply sat on the couch the whole evening. I've given her a half dose every evening since mm-hmm. and no more wandering. I mentioned this to the manager of an assisted living facility that I was touring, and they said, yes, we know about this, and several of our residents have relatives go to Illinois or Michigan to get their gummies. Mm-hmm. This obviously is well known by word of mouth in the caregiver dementia community. Mm-hmm. The problem, of course, is that marijuana is illegal in Wisconsin.
Correct.
My question here is, should I tell my wife's primary care physician and her neurologist what I'm doing?
Well, first of all, sundowning, which is what often occurs later in the afternoon and the early evening, are often people who have dementia have more problems. Mm. And so wandering at night or changing in behavior at night, especially as it gets darker and darker, does become an issue with people. Number two, definitely tell your doctor, definitely tell the neurologist, because you should tell them everything, you know, everything that you're doing and what you're actually doing. Next, in the infinite stupidity of some legislatures, such as the state of Wisconsin, they have not approved medical marijuana for situations like this. And I am four square on the fact that there is a place for medical marijuana versus lorazepam. Now, lorazepam is a benzodiazepine. It's on something called the Beers list. We know it's not good for people over the age of 65, that they might fall, they might hurt themselves. And we know that it really doesn't work very well for wandering. But there's not a lot of research that has with, we'll say, gummies, which are marijuana, you know, marijuana extract. And the reason why there's not a lot of research is the feds, the DEA, in their infinite stupidity, continues to rank it in the same class as heroin. Come on. And because it's the same as heroin and cocaine, you cannot have research that's done with it to really find out what the dose is and whether or not it works. And I've had a number of other caregivers who have done this. So they have to travel to Michigan or they have to travel to Illinois in order to get it. Not only that, but these are often older people who travel there, and they know they're committing an illegal act, and they don't want to do it, and they're anxious coming back because they've got something illegal in their car, which, if they're stopped, could actually be, you know, they could actually, police could actually do something. What are the chances? I'm just saying it is an illegal thing. So I think it's time for the legislature in Wisconsin to bite the bullet and do what other states have done. Medical marijuana is commonly used in more than half the states. I think it's 38 or 42 states that allow it to be done. And because you need to have things like that are done, this is an editorial comment, on people who have dementia because it may help them. So the answer is yes, continue to use it. Yes, tell your doctors. And yes, the issue will be if she goes into an assisted living facility, they will not be able to give it to her. You are going to be the only one who will be able to do it because it will be against the law for them to do it, so they will not.
Do you have a healthy living question for Zorba? Just leave us a voicemail or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
All right. Should we do this again next week, Zorba?
I hope so.
All right. If you missed anything during the show or you just want to stream the show online anytime, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org and, of course, through Facebook.
And you can call us anytime.
Anytime.
And leave us your question at 800-462-7413.
I got it right.
You nailed it. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is me, Carl Christensen. Our technical director is Brad Colbert. These are great sound effects. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. Our sound effects are by Zorba Pastor. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Carl Christensen asking you to join us on the next
Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
From WPR.
Did you miss something on today's show? Simply go to ZorbaPastor.org to catch up on all things Zorba. There you will find recipes from the show, links to the Facebook page, Zorba's Healthy Living articles, and you can subscribe to the weekly podcast. On the web, that's ZorbaPastor.org.